We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. So a good starting point for becoming white allies is storytelling. Some of you know JT. He's a minister in another church, but we think of him as part of ours as well. I heard him tell this story, and then I asked if I could share it. Why he, a black man, gets showered and dressed before he goes to Lowe's. It was an kind of story for me because I've done a lot of home projects. And if I need a part in the middle of a project, sawdust all over me, paint clothes on, ripped, torn, doesn't matter, in the car, off I go. But not so for JT. I spent a lot of time managing how white people see me, he said. Now, JT is very tall, and he's very muscular. He's not just a black man, he's a big black man. And white people feel threatened when he's around, which can very easily bring him harm. A white person in Lowe's wearing project clothes, he said, considered hardworking. A large black man in project clothes in Lowe's, a hoodlum. And so it has happened. He gets followed around the store. Management keeps a very close eye on him. He experiences the quiet hostility that white people don't even notice, but comes up when the threat response is evoked. And that is a hostility that could go very badly for him. He said, I could jump in the car, or I could spend the 20 minutes that it takes to make myself acceptable and then change back into project clothes when I get home, which can seem like a small thing, but there are a lot of small things. He said, white people don't know that I'm a minister. They don't know that I was a cop for 20 years. They just know I'm big and black. And so to avoid that white people threat response, I dress up. And I don't speak too loudly. And I don't speak too fast. But, he said, it happens anyway. And when it does, I feel embarrassed. And when it does, I feel singled out. But hey, I don't come home dead. So, he said, I put a lot more thought into my clothes than I would, and I'm quieter than I would be, and I observe more, and I speak less. A lot of small things that are nevertheless burdensome things. JT, who many of us know, he pays a daily energy dividend to just be. The invisible systems that we've been talking about that keep the short end of the stick and the long end of the stick outcomes firmly in place. Stories are a great starting place for becoming white allies. But you should also know it's kind of an unfair burden to ask the people of color in your life to tell you their stories. If they do it in the context of relationship, all the better. But we need stories, so there are plenty of books and articles and documentaries and podcasts. Stories are a good place to start, a good place to begin understanding. So, as you know, I've been asking people about songs that they have found meaningful during this time. Sky told me that this Paul McCartney tune, Blackbird, was written in response to racial inequity in the United States right after Martin Luther King was assassinated. And since she learned that, she said, she's been singing it with friends and then using it to precipitate conversations about racial inequity. That'd be a good conversation to have. Anyway, have a listen.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Well, let's begin our lesson. Becoming people of our time, why meditation matters in a crisis. Becoming people who are able to put our hands to the work so that our society can come out the other side of this time, a bigger version of us. Becoming people who are able to participate fully in the awakening and the transforming and the rethinking and the reshaping that history is demanding of us right now. Becoming people able to imagine new possibilities and to rise above our character flaws, to rise above our ingrained, compulsed, habit-driven thoughts and feelings, people able to listen more and react less, able to put our hands to building a new tomorrow. In my late teenage years, I was already pretty focused on history, and pretty early on, I realized that it's less great people who shape history and more great moments in history that shape people, which as a teenager was kind of disappointing given my personality type. I wanted to be a great man, but I didn't want to have to depend on some vague notion called history. You know, you get the personality you get, and then you've got to spend the rest of your lifetime working on it. But anyway, my teenage self began to wish, if I had just been born in this historical moment or that historical moment. But who knew? Here we are, every one of us, born into one of those moments now. And let's not, we've been saying in this lesson, let's not miss it. As I reiterated so many times last week, history is sitting us down sternly, waving a finger saying, don't miss this moment. I was reading an article this week. I put the link in the live stream notes. Using census data, it compared wage differences between white and black people since 1950. And after factoring in the sharp percentage rise of people of color who've been incarcerated since 1950, and those unable to find living wage jobs who have left the workplace, the wage gap is as large today as it was in 1950. In other words, racial income disparities today are no different than they were before the March on Washington. Now, that's true of income. It's also true of family wealth. The typical black household today is poorer than 80% of white households. In 2017, we did a pretty long lesson, took the whole fall, on hidden social policies that have made it so. A long chain of seemingly non-racial policies that nevertheless advantaged white people and disadvantaged people of color, all the way back from Reconstruction through the Homestead Act and the GI Bill and the Highway Act and redlining and on and on and on and on. But here's the thing. For a lot of those last 70 years, we have been telling ourselves a story. a story that things are getting better for black folk. And for those who are actually visible, those reported in the numbers, it has been. But the point of the article was how we have used reporting statistics to make a lot of people of color invisible. The uptick of black people leaving the workplace because they can't get living wage work, those people don't show up in wage or wealth statistics. But reporting that way, we can keep telling ourselves that things are getting better. Mass incarceration, imprisoning more people than any other nation on earth, those people also don't show up in wage and wealth numbers. So hidden numbers, but the same outcome for 70 years. The same short end, long end of the stick outcomes stubbornly held in place, just more hidden. So I said last week, one of the things making this moment in history so rare and so important is that hidden things are no longer staying hidden. The pandemic, I said last week, is unmasking hidden policies, housing and transportation and jobs and food and schooling and healthcare, no longer smoke and mirrored behind ideology or behind politics. Now they are showing up in human bodies. Policies showing up as pre-existing conditions and disproportionately killing black and brown people. And those same hidden policies also showing up as a tenacious wage gap, a tenacious wealth gap, cleverly hidden, but nevertheless keeping things unchanged for 70 years. When history sits us down and waves a finger at us and insists of us, don't miss this moment, it's saying to us, what you didn't see, now you cannot not see. You have to work really hard to not see policies showing up in human bodies. You have to work really hard to not see policies showing up in a tenacious wage gap. That's what's making this moment so important. That's what's giving it all the marks of a historical pivot point. Things once hidden are no longer hidden. We could be, all of us, poised to break through into a new world, a world of economic and social and political and spiritual inclusion, a world in which 70 years from now, or 50, or 20, hidden policies do not show up as pre-existing conditions, do not show up as stubborn gaps in wages and wealth. But history also warns us we could easily miss this moment, inertia, a broken political system. But our focus for this lesson is even deeper than those, our brains. Our brains are tricky organs. They play all kinds of tricks designed to get us advantage and then to press that advantage once we've gotten it. All kinds of tricks to help us not see anything that causes interior disequilibrium. All kinds of defensive tricks and all kinds of dismissive tricks. So be careful, history insists. Don't miss this moment. And so, spirituality. And so, working the circle. Spiritual wisdom and practices that help us rise above our brain's evolutionary equilibrium tricks. Spiritual wisdom and spiritual practices that help us see what our brains connive to keep hidden from us. So, why meditation matters in a crisis? Meditation helps us disentangle from those instinctive parts of our brains, those habit-driven parts of our brains. Meditation helps us detach from the compulsive power of thinking thoughts that we have thought before, being controlled by emotional reactions that we have felt before. Meditation helps us detach from stories that we have told ourselves before and beliefs that we hold that tell us how the world is, how it works, and how we should be in it. Stories that blind us to other ways that the world could be and other ways that we could be in this new world. I said last week, if reimagining the world and then collectively working to make it so, if that was easy, it would have been done because there's been a lot of good people before us who showed up to do the work. They are why we are at this pivot point now. But that doesn't make the work before us any easier. It's just easier than it would have been before them. Fundamentally rethinking ourselves and fundamentally rethinking society, it is very difficult. And we need every tool of wisdom and every practice of self-awareness and detachment that is available to us. And so, meditation. A small story to give us a picture of the kind of reimagining work that I'm talking about. It's going to sound so simple when I tell the story, so small, but it's not. The actual doing, yeah, that doesn't sound that hard, but to get our brains to the place that we will even allow ourselves to do this kind of fundamental reimagining, this kind of fundamental rethinking, that does not happen very often. Getting ourselves to the willingness and the watchfulness and the openness to discern something that doesn't fit into our old categories, that's the difficult part of deep historical change. So here's the small story. Two white, middle-class, suburban women in our community. Like all of us, they were seeing the news coverage of the protests turning violent. This was before it became as clear as it did that how broadly the protests have been peaceful. But anyway, smashed windows make for good television, and violence evokes fear, and fear keeps people tuning in. So yeah, like all of us, these two ladies got a full load of the script. Hey, violence, that is bad. Focus on that. Hey, violence is bad. Smashing windows is bad. That shouldn't be happening. It's a script like most scripts that once they get into our heads, they tend to stop us doing any further thinking or rethinking, because violence is bad. Great. Once I say that, I'm finished. All done seeing, all done thinking, all done rethinking. But here's the thing about these two women. They both work the circle. They engage the spiritual practice that help us see and help us rise above habit and rise above instinct. And they didn't stop with, hey, violence, that's bad. They kept going. So one of the women ran across a thought experiment posted by a friend. The post asked her to think about this. What would it take for you to riot? So get out of your own context for a moment and imagine yourself in a different context. What would it take for you to riot? And she said, I posted my reply pretty quickly, more immediate impulse close to the surface than drawn out and considered. She sent me her post. It was something like this. Well, here's what it would take for me to riot. Pervasive, long-standing injustice, that would do it. Especially if everywhere I turned to get justice, I kept not getting it. Especially if I came to believe that the whole justice system is stacked against me and that I would never get justice. That happens. Now, she said, I'm feeling hopeless, I'm feeling despair, and knowing myself, I'm getting angry. So, I guess, if the shoe was on the other foot, I think I would pick up a brick. I think I would smash a window, and I'd probably feel good doing it. Well, these two women, they are spiritual friends, and so the first woman was telling the second about this thought experiment and about her kind of rethinking epiphany. When she did, the second woman had a rethinking epiphany of her own. Now, I know both of them. Woman number one, I could actually kind of imagine her throwing a brick. But woman number two, never. She'd be more, shut this shit down, we are getting out of here. But in her epiphany, she didn't think, yeah, that brick thrower, that could be me, because honestly, it probably couldn't be her. But her insight was, I know woman number one, and I've known her for a long time. I've shared life with her, and I really get how injustice riles her up. I'm not at all surprised that she would feel those feelings and pick up a brick. And, she said, loving her as I do, I can forgive her for just about anything. If she was going to pick up a brick, I would understand. So woman number two's epiphany, I get my friend. I guess I get the window smashers too. So woman number one's new thinking, that window smasher, the one I couldn't understand, I could be that person. Woman number two's new thinking, that window smasher, the one I couldn't understand, I could love that person. Oh, I could be that person. Oh, I could love that person. understanding. It's a starting point for building a bigger version of we. Now, nobody I know thinks that window smashing is a good idea. The protesters don't. Black Lives Matter leaders, they don't. To be people of our time, however, we have to get past the well-rehearsed, thought-limiting scripts. Those scripts are actually designed by our brains to let us off the hook, to shut down further thinking, to keep us not having to do something. Bad people throwing bics, okay, I'm done. Or that could be me, or that could be someone I love. Say that story, and now we've got to tune in and find out what's next. Paul pointed this out for us. No sense, he said, putting all of our focus on the sinner, the other. No, because if we're honest, that's us. Chief among sinners, that's how he described himself. What is in all of us is in all of us. Oh, I could be that person. Oh, I could love that person. People of our time will be people who understand the other. People of our time will be people who feel what the other feels. People of our time will be able to see from outside their own scripts, outside their own personal experience, and see and understand and learn. Which means to become people of our time, it will really help us if we will meditate. Meditation enhances our ability to step outside of our false selves. It helps us detach from our ingrained thoughts and emotion. It helps us see from the perspective of someone else. And meditation helps us do that even while we are under the influence of threat brain. I talked about that a few weeks ago. The circle wagons brain instincts, the adversary ally brain instincts. People of our time function at a level of spiritual maturity and emotional maturity that allows us to be part of building the tomorrow that history is offering us. This week, I heard a couple of historians talking about how pandemics from ancient Rome through to current times, how they often, but not always, generate system change. The invitation is there, but it's not always accepted. I put a link to the interview in the notes there. Well, several weeks I referenced another article about how after the 1918 pandemic, American society went totally quiet about the pandemic. We jumped back to normal just as quickly as we could. Now, in no small part, this historian was saying, was because so many of us were ashamed of how we had acted during the pandemic. We missed the system change invitation of that moment. Let's not miss this one. Don't miss this moment. When we were trying to find our religious way, rejecting the toxic parts of religions and finding and restoring the healthy parts, we talked a lot about the spiritual practice of discernment. Well, this moment needs discernment as much, if not more, than that one. Discerning the moment, discerning our days, discerning wisdom. And our ability to discern requires that we let go of entrenched thoughts that we think. Thoughts that we perhaps once believed were wisdom, and in fact, in another setting, might have been wisdom. But now we need to open ourselves to new possibility, take advantage of new opportunities, and participate in building a new world, and so that old wisdom is no longer applicable in a new context. And meditation is a practice in letting go of the entrenched. Meditation is a practice in letting go of the entrenched. So, we sit down. Remember, this always goes better if you practice with a spiritual friend. We sit down. And we give, as we do so often on Sundays, our full attention to our breath. We hear it. We feel it. Breath focus is a way for some minutes each day to not be thinking unbroken, unbidden chain thoughts. There's time enough for that the rest of the day. But when we sit down, we are saying to our thoughts, not now, not here. For now, we are detaching from habit thinking. Breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in and breathe out. And sure enough, once we sit down to do that, as soon as we've taken our second or our third breath, entrenched habit being entrenched, those chain thoughts immediately crowd their way back in. What, our thoughts say to us, you want me to be quiet? Well, that's just stupid. Meditation is stupid. Here's what you need to do. You need to be thinking right now about that new phone or that deadline. Breathing, schmeathing. Let's think chain thoughts. Let's feel chained feelings. Come on, it's what we do. And if that doesn't work, habit thoughts resort to another strategy. You know, you should probably just admit it to yourself. You're not really meditation material. You have the more active mind. Meditation probably does help some people. It's probably good for some people, but not really you. And if that doesn't work, hey, have you considered how much you need me? These thoughts, these feelings, they are you. They are what makes you you. Let go of them. I don't know. Maybe die. So some version of those interior objections has been visited upon just about everybody who ever sat down to meditate. But if we do, if we get past the objections and we do sit down and we do give our attention to breath, if when the compulsive thoughts and feelings kick in, if we see them, we see them taking over, and then we simply let them go and return our focus and our attention to our breath. It seems so small. It seems so simple. But we are actually doing something really important. When we do that, we have found within ourselves, and we have practiced being a part of ourselves, a seeing part of ourselves, that can take up a position outside of our thoughts, outside of our feelings, and has the capacity to direct them, to say to them, not now. Accessing that part of us that can say to our thoughts, not now, we weaken those thoughts and we weaken those emotional reactions hold over us. We practice being a deeper part of ourselves, a not dominated by thoughts and feelings part of ourselves. And when we do that, the spiritual tradition tells us, we touch a deep source part of ourselves. The spiritual tradition says when you do that, and when you find that observing part of yourself, you have found a source of wisdom. It is within you. You have found a source of strength. It is within you. You found a source of virtue. It is within you. You found a source of discernment. It is within you. Within you is a part that is able to be open to new possibilities when they are emerging. Within you, there's a part that is able to see those new possibilities. They are within you to help build a new world on the basis of those possibilities. Meditation matters in a crisis. Now, let me finish up with a very practical tip. I think I might have mentioned this a year or so ago. It's an app that my son introduced to me. And you can get it on both Android and iOS. And it's a breathing app. It's called Prana Breath. You can find that app on your phone. And there's a free version. But if you want to modify the amount of time spent breathing out, breathing in, pausing, you can pay $10 and get the forever version to do that. I'm going to play for you just one of the breathing patterns. This one's called the Clear Mind breathing pattern. It has a relatively short breath in and a long breath out, and it just does that as it goes through. And there are about 10 different breathing patterns. I'll put it up here by the microphone so you can hear it. So we breathe in, we breathe out. Let me turn it up so you can hear it. Short breath in, long breath out. Short breath in, long breath out. And there are several different breathing patterns in the app that you can practice. What it's done for me is it has helped me be steady in my meditation practice on those days when I'm not doing it with someone else. And so I would encourage you, get the app. Really, I just encourage you to be steady and faithful in your meditative practice. History is requiring something great of us right now. Meditation is one of the most powerful tools we have to do it. And so, indwelling spirit, to discern the time in which we are living and to be people of that time, spiritually and emotionally capable of putting our hand to the work, this giving birth to a new world moment. May that be so in us, and may that flow through us. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings, and as you're doing that, what are you thinking? What is stirring up in your heart? By the way, you can do the tithes and offerings on our website. There's also a donate button in the live stream link. Gene, what are folks thinking about?
So, Chris Thompson. Chris Thompson, he was listening, and he wrote this. He said, with many things, the more we can know as an individual, the more we can engage.
Wait, go back and read that again.
I'm wondering if part, with many things, the more we can know an individual, the more we can engage with the other. Okay? I'm wondering if part of the segregation systemic racism is implicitly aware that if I know and love an individual black people, that I, as a white person, might want to change things for the better for the individual. So the system may have learned over time separate, stereotype, and dehumanize, do that, and the status quo will remain the same. But if we do the work of talking with and getting to know one another, cracks start to form in that systemic narrative. In short, the power is in individuals knowing and living individuals.
I hope you heard that. Hear now the word of the Lord. Now here, let's just notice, Chris Thompson, that you posted that after having just bought a new camper. Why aren't you out camping today? So, yes, that is exactly it. So, we, as I've said many times, we didn't create the world that we're in, we just inherited it. And we inherited a world in which it is very easy to go through our days and go through our lives and not rub up against one another. And if we do, we've learned these socialized skills of keeping ourselves separate from one another, so it's easy to not know the story of the other. And when we know one another's stories, it does change everything. When we know what it's like for JT to go to Lowe's, when we know what it's like for a black mom to have the talk, when we know how that we're having to rethink the talk, because even the talk doesn't seem to be changing things, when we know what it's like to be someone who has done all the right stuff and is still stuck in that 70-year wage gap, when we know a person who has become dear to us, the world changes. But there are forces marshaled against that ever happening, and Chris does a great job pointing them out. We have to go out of our way to build relationship across the lines that have divided us. And so, there's the work that is set before us, building relationship, the power that comes from relationship building. Great, Chris, that's fantastic. Who else, Gene?
So, Tony posted, and he said,
focusing on rioting is the what. This relieves you from focusing on the why. And I kind of had a response to that, which was, why takes much more self-examination and once you do that, you kind of have to respond.
Well, the what, why, that's a great way of examining the stories we tell ourselves. But, you know, because there are so many variants of them, let's just stand back a little bit and say, here's what the thing does. The thing says, okay, you know the answer now, you're done, you're finished, you can stop thinking. The thing under the thing says, no, you're not done. Because if oneness is a better description of reality, then if someone is behaving in a way that we can't understand, it's very easy to say, they're just different, they're not like me. But the reality is, we human beings all have the same kinds of brains, the same kinds of heart, the same kinds of souls. We all care about our children. We all care about the future. We all want the same stuff. And so if someone is behaving in a way that we think that's bad, that's an invitation to go and say, why? Why is someone thinking about that? So why is an important question, as Tony points out. But the point is to understand the thing under the thing. What are the motivating drives? Because that's where we're going to have to go to work to change things. Why would people feel the way they feel? It's so easy to just get the simple answer that our political party tells us we ought to have. So easy to get the simple answer that our socioeconomic class tells us we ought to have, or that our white solidarity tells us we should have. It's so easy to just go there and be done. And the spiritual tradition says you're not done. You will miss the moment if that's as far as you go. So we must go to the thing under the thing and the thing under that and the thing under that until we get to the place where we realize we are one, we are not two. It's great, Tony.
So, two other things.
Two other things. Chris said he's prepping his wedding.
Oh,
right
so
now.
He's is so out. I assume that's with the camp. He's camping. Man.
I don't know if he's camping, but he's working out.
Now you can do church camping, and be out camping.
Matt Reardon kind of responded to Chris's message, and he said, I believe that to be true, Chris. It's also part of why I'm thankful for our community and the focus on bridging these gaps. It's why I'm thankful for One Week that gives us an opportunity to take action and build relational power
exactly.
together.
You know, if you hear those, you know, when we go through the announcements, those of you who are just joining us in the last little bit, about once a year, I'll do a lesson called A Guide to the Announcements at, it used to be NRCC, now Common Thread, A Guide to the Announcements at Common Thread. And that guide will be a lesson on working the circle. Because working the circle, it's we draw a circle and we split it into quadrants and we say, if you distill out the wisdom of the spiritual tradition, we have four categories of practice. We have the communal spiritual practices, the contemplative spiritual practices, the learning spiritual practices, and the serving spiritual practices. And those things are designed to help us move forward in our souls. Well, down there in the serving practices, we've started to realize you can't just do service work. Service work takes care of an immediate need right in front of us. We must also do systems work. And systems work is what we do to change the systems that are creating the need in the first place. But you can't just do service work and systems work. You also have to do spirituality work, because spirituality work is what we were talking about today, is what allows us to sustain the work of systems work, even though we are feeling triggered as we do it. And so, yes, Matt, and thank you all. And I see the time is up, so if you would put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine, which means that we carry love and joy and peace, patience, kindness, goodness, all that discernment, wisdom, all the things that we need for this moment. It is within us. So let's access it. And if you would, extend your other hand to our city and let's look for an opportunity to share what is in us with the people that we live with and work with, people we go to school with, people with whom we share our city, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We're dismissed. Why don't you head over to the Zoom call and have a chat and talk about what you're thinking. See you next week. I'll probably see you during the week as well.
If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.